Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
I'm willing to bet that when you think of a problem gambler, you think about a man. A dude, perhaps, wearing a jersey and a ball cap, sweating out the over-under on a late game at the bar. Down on his luck. Or maybe a grizzled vet chasing one last hand at the blackjack table before the casino throws him out. Or, if you're thinking of a successful gambler, maybe one of those TV poker stars wearing sunglasses, raking in money at the World Series. If you picture any women at all, it's probably an older lady, maybe a grandma, pulling on a slot machine, or maybe yelling at the bingo hall. What you probably don't picture is a suburban mom killing time at soccer practice or whatever stereotype you want to imagine, losing the mortgage on her phone. And that's, well, that's a big and growing problem. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story.
Rob Chernick is a freelance journalist and a 2022 Michener Deakin Investigative Journalism Fellow. He wrote about the largely uncovered issue, I guess, of problem gambling in women for Chatelaine. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Jordan. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And I like to start episodes like this, especially ones that have been so thoroughly reported as your story, with just tell me a little bit about the people you met while doing it. Maybe start by telling us about Gail and her gambling problem. What happened to her?
Sure. So about 20 years ago, Gail had started gambling online amid a family tragedy. So her daughter had been assaulted and Gail's husband was working away from home. So she was navigating this family tragedy mostly alone. And Gail actually started gambling online during this period as a sort of escape. And what this meant was she was using those websites, those kind of offshore, under-the-table gambling websites. Because she managed the household finances, she was able to do this undetected. It wasn't actually until the pandemic that she finally hit a breaking point and was in debt to the tune of about $500,000. So at this point, her husband was looking to retire early and expecting, you know, a certain life in retirement.
Oh, boy.
And unfortunately, Gail had to admit that there were multiple mortgages on the house. It was looking like the car was going to be repossessed. And this retirement vision was not going to happen. You know, everybody... family has a different reaction to this. So Gail's husband actually filed for divorce. Her son stopped speaking to her, but her daughter took her in at this time. And Gail ended up moving to a new community. She had to find a new job and start her life over in middle age, not only in recovery from gambling, but paying off this very large debt.
So you talked to several people, maybe not all with as severe a problem as Gail's, all women. And when I think of gambling addictions, for some probably sexist reason, I always think of men. Am I alone in that?
You're definitely not alone in that. I think it's because a lot of gambling gets connected with sort of these visions we have of Western masculinity. I know. Sometimes that comes down to things like aggression and control and logic and risk, you know, the elements of those within gambling are kind of traditionally male attitudes. The other thing, too, is that a lot of the ads that we see for gambling, you know, appeal directly to men, having these male sports heroes, this heavy sports focus, especially in the recent wave of sports betting that we have ever since it's been legalized nationwide. But there's also everything from Western films where, you know, they're playing cards to who you picture at a poker table to even the concept of like an underground bookmaker, right? Those are all these notions that we traditionally associate with men and kind of masculinity. So it really has had, you know, for many decades and for a very long time in history, it's been associated traditionally with men as opposed to with women.
Before we talked, I was trying to picture in my head the female-associated gambling propaganda I may have seen. And I only could come up with two, the little old lady at the slot machines and the Simpsons episode where Marge becomes addicted to gambling. That's it. Every other picture of gambling in my head is male.
And what's interesting about that is both of those, I would argue, would be more recent in, you know, the long span of history. Because in Canada, it's only since 1989, very late in 1989, that we had our first commercial casino. You know, now that's a common feature in many communities. But, you know, like that hasn't been even my entire lifetime. If you also look at video lottery terminals, online gambling, you know, some of these methods that women frequently use to gamble, a lot of them are very new.
So that's kind of the perception that's out there in popular culture. What do we actually know about the demographics of gamblers, or more specifically of problem gamblers between men and women?
One thing that I really feel is important to point out is that you're hard pressed to find a jurisdiction anywhere where gambling is well tracked. And that includes Canada.
Even where it's legalized.
Yes, even where it's legalized. And what's interesting about this, you know, I've been reporting and researching gambling as a topic since 2019, when I went to the Banff Center's investigative journalism program and started a research project related to casinos in Nova Scotia. And the thing is, in Canada, it's spotty, and part of the issue is that even in provinces where we have multiple surveys about the prevalence of problem gambling, the methodologies are different, so it's hard to compare them. Now, one of the better comparisons is a study that came out in 2020, and it used the 2018 Canadian Community Health Survey. And the whole idea was, first of all, to just compare the 2018 data from data in 2002. And what they noticed was a decrease in problem and at-risk gambling overall, but it's still a significant problem. So at the time in 2018, they found that female at-risk and problem gamblers collectively made up 2.6% of the population. Now, this is behind men, where it's 4%. But what's notable to me is that that's still an adult female population equivalent to the size of Halifax. That's the size of the issue that we're talking about in this country today.
Has that been changing in recent years? Has it been growing? We've talked on this show before, to be honest, related to sports betting, about the recent rise in the number of gamblers and the number of problem gamblers. Are we seeing that with women?
We are. For example, in Sweden, a few years back, it was actually announced that women had outnumbered men when it came to problem gambling for the first time in recorded history. As well, there have been researchers in Quebec who found that more women were gambling online during the pandemic. And even more recently, and this is one related to sports betting, which just left me absolutely agog, you know, Taylor Swift, because, you know, of her connection, shall we say, you know, by dating someone on a Super Bowl team, there was actually an increase in female sports betting. So BetMGM actually mentioned a 51% increase in female bettors placing Super Bowl wagers on their platform and called it the Taylor Swift effect.
That doesn't surprise me because those platforms, I can't speak specifically to BetMGM because I'm not looking at all of them, but those platforms around the Super Bowl were offering like Taylor Swift specific props, right? Like how many times will they show her on camera? Will she kiss Travis after the game? All that kind of stuff. You could bet on that.
Yeah. And the problem with it is that, yes, it gets packaged as something kind of entertaining and lighthearted, but the focus is getting these women to sign up for an account, to start getting the emails, to start placing bets. And there's no doubt that there are women who placed bets for the first time on that day who eventually will become at-risk and problem gamblers.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Has there been any, and I know we just talked about how little great research we have here, but has there been any research done in why women gamble or how women gamble as opposed to men? You just mentioned all the risk-coded, masculine-coded image we have of men gambling. Do women gamble for the same reasons? Do they gamble the same way?
So there have been some differences observed. So for example, women may develop a gambling addiction later in life than men, whereas men would do this a bit younger. And women may also develop gambling addictions more quickly, which I think is one of the most critical issues we need to think about, especially with the recent, you know, expansion of online gambling in Canada. Because when you look at the sports sites, and even in Ontario, iGaming Ontario, where there are privately run but government-regulated casinos, you know, that has really changed the landscape and has allowed a lot more customers to use these, you know, now legal platforms. And I think that because there has been evidence that women can develop a gambling addiction more quickly, you know, we really do need to start paying more attention to it as a specific problem that impacts women. The other thing, too, that needs to be mentioned is that a lot of women gamble to escape, whereas men tend to do it a bit more for the thrill and the excitement. It's also important to note that gambling debts can impact women differently. So, for example, if they're in a relationship which ends, their household income is often more directly affected. And those challenges can be compounded, of course, if they have young children. We also need to talk about the role of caregiving, because that has come up a lot in my interviews. The stresses of caregiving for children or parents or others, you know, that puts a different burden and expectation on women. And that stress, that need for escape can sometimes lead them to gamble. And also the stigma is different. There's this one great quote in the piece where Gail mentions how, you know, men can go to the golf course and gamble and it's part of business. And yet when women gamble, it's treated like this sort of dirty secret. It's still something that there's a stigma about today.
I mean, all the ads tell me that as a male gambling on sports, I'm powerful. I'm part of the club.
Yeah. And I mean, I talk to a lot of, you know, men in their 20s and 30s who, you know, they're saying the same thing. It's something exciting. It's something fun. It's something that they see as inconsequential.
I mean, I've been gambling on sports since I was probably 13 years old playing fantasy baseball, and I'm in my early 40s now. Thankfully, I've never had a problem with it. I've also, even when it was illegal, never felt shame about it or felt like I had to hide it from anyone.
I would say that's not true for many female gamblers, including women that I spoke with for this article, that there is a different feeling of shame and stigma towards problem gambling.
So let me ask you this then. We've just talked about all the differences in the why and how we feel about it related to gambling between men and women. Is that reflected in the way we address it? And I'm talking here about how we tackle the problem, how we make help available to people who are feeling as though they might have a problem, and how we try to help them with that problem if they sign up.
Treatment for gambling is often gender neutral. So with Gamblers Anonymous meetings, for example, anyone can go, anyone is welcome. There are occasionally Alcoholics Anonymous and Gamblers Anonymous meetings where they are women only, but those are very few and far between. When I was researching this piece, I only came across one in Canada that was specifically listed as female only for Gamblers Anonymous. And you also have to think of the different health supports and initiatives that come from the provinces. In my research, I did not come across any that were specifically female-focused, whether that was, you know, just even like a standalone website describing issues related to women and compulsive gambling, or whether that was a particular kind of style of treatment or treatment option.
So we've just spent a lot of time talking about how there is a huge gender gap with basically everything to do with gambling. I guess what I'm trying to wrap my head around is why nobody is addressing that gap directly, why nobody is even, you know, marketing to women or marketing treatment to women, given that we know clearly that women gamble, if not as much, then close to as much as men.
So this is a bit of a complex question, and I'm going to try my best to break it down. So in my experiences researching and reporting on this topic, I would have to say the first issue that's relevant here would be that there's just not a lot of research specifically done on women's gambling. One of the first major North American pieces of research was only done in 1988. And one of the more prominent pieces of research done here in Canada was the PhD thesis of Dr. Tracy Afifi, who is now a professor at the University of Manitoba. And she looked at how Canadian women's experiences with problem gambling impacted their mental and physical health, and also their help-seeking behavior. And what's interesting is, even then, in 2008, you know, Dr. Afifi was able to identify several examples where women made up a third to nearly half of treatment-seeking gamblers. And when I spoke with her for Chatelaine, she since mostly focused her research actually on child abuse instead of on gambling. But she was saying that it's not much better today when it comes to the knowledge base that we have. And a big part of this specifically is just that there's not necessarily enough research on gambling itself that's happening. So to get to that sort of added benchmark of, you know, specific information on female gamblers, you know, we're just not able to reach that high bar. You know, we have some great gambling researchers in Canada, and we do have some important work that comes out, but almost none of it is related to female gamblers specifically. And that's in part just because there aren't always opportunities for funding this research. Now, recently, there have been some calls for research specifically looking for gambling, but the challenge is that's not necessarily, that may help a little bit with kind of the overall knowledge gap, but not necessarily the gender knowledge gap.
In order to get people to take this problem seriously, do we need to see more representation? You know, when every second ad on my TV is a bunch of dudes gambling, it can be easy for everyone from me to the people deciding what to research to think like, oh yeah, we should look into that. Obviously, the downside of that is representation may also encourage more women to start gambling. But do we need to put it out there more visibly to get people to realize, like, this is happening, whether you want to acknowledge it or not?
So when I pitched the story to Chatelaine, I felt it was really important because in my research, I wasn't finding women used as sources in stories about gambling addiction and gambling in Canada. I could only find one who was named, but I couldn't even find any as anonymous sources. I think that as journalists, we have really failed overall covering the gambling industry. That's something, like, I don't say lightly. I have done a lot of research into past and prior reporting, and it's amazing the difference that we had in the level of analysis and the level of critique and the level of pushback that the industry offered towards gambling in the early days before we really knew how it was all going to sort out, when there were fears that, you know, opening a casino might turn a city into a den of iniquity.
To be a little cynical, could I add, before those companies were advertising in our publications and on our shows?
Yes, I think you could say that, but I definitely believe it's a problem that predates the recent raft of gambling advertisements that we've seen in the country. I think what's also important to note is that it is an issue where, over time, the amount of information that we are given about the gambling industry through, like, the annual reports of Crown corporations, for example, there's just a lot less of it. So, you know, over time, we're both left with less reporting, less open transparency on how the industry is impacting our country. And so there's all sorts of issues that we are just not discussing and we have a knowledge gap in. So, for example, you know, my Missionary Deacon project, which I'm working on, is focused on gambling-related suicides in Canada. I have reported on the tourism impacts of casinos, the economic development impact of the casino in my hometown, Sydney, Nova Scotia. I have looked at even just why in the 1990s did we have all of this pushback against gambling expansion, and yet today we don't have that in the same way. So these are all questions that are really important and critical to ask. And I must say, luckily in the new sort of sports betting era, we are asking more questions. We are being more critical. But I would say that right now we're in the situation where there is just a lot of information we're lacking. There's a lot of issues to tackle. And it's unfortunately something we have to do all at once, even as everything, you know, else that is happening in our economy, in our global political and social systems is happening. So it's a tall order. And I think that by telling stories like this one in Chatelaine, I think it's hopefully going to have an impact in showing people, especially not only just, like, you know, women are gambling and this is an important issue for women and a relevant issue for women, but also just, you know, these are people just like you. These are like your neighbors. They're not some other that you don't know. And I think that's really important.
Rob, this was an important conversation. I'm glad we could have it. And thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Rob Chernick, writing in Chatelaine. That was The Big Story. For more, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. And again, I'm willing to bet you find something worth listening to on our website. You can also, of course, send us some feedback. The way to do that is via email, hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca, or by leaving a voicemail, 416-935-5935. You can always find this podcast in any major podcast player and probably most of the minor ones. If you have a podcast player, as I've said before, that you prefer and you don't see The Big Story there, let us know. We'll make sure we get it onto your favorite player. You can, of course, also ask for us on a smart speaker, whether that's in your home or your car, by asking it to play The Big Story podcast.
Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.